Jai Ma. So, 24th April is just round the corner, and this talk will be primarily for 24th April, being the Darshan Day. As we know the background, basically it has a very interesting history. Of course, it's the anniversary of the mother's final return to Pondicherry. And when mother was asked the significance of this day, she says it is the anniversary of my return to Pondicherry, which was the tangible sign of the sure victory over the adverse forces. So with this comes an interesting question, that but we still see adverse forces. So what really is the meaning or intrinsic sense of this? So when the divine says it's the sure sign of victory, tangible sign. So what it means is that it's an indication. Indication that they will be, the adverse forces are going to, they have been won in principle and their end has come. That's what it means. And we can take it something like the prophecy which is made when Kansa is ruling, and ruling mighty and strong, and this is a prophecy. So the prophecy is that Kansa, your reign is going to end. And who is going to end it? Your own sister's son. Now you see, now between the prophecy and the actual event, so many things happen. And it's a very interesting story, both Ramayana and the Mahabharata in this sense. Because whenever we hear a prophecy, we just want to see it happen. People ask, when is mother has spoken of supramental world, new creation, where is it, where is it? We love miracles, which is okay. But divine doesn't deal with, in one sense, all life is a constant miracle. But that's not how divine wants to operate always. The reason is, it also makes us very lazy. See, when people are constantly doing, even so-called miracles of science, if you want to put it like that, artificial intelligence, when something is very easy and is given without due value, then even when we get it, we don't value it. See, there are people who lived right next to Sri Aurobindo and the mother, right near them. And some of us would wonder, what a felicity to just live near them. You would be willing to die 1,000 times if I have to say that. But people had that time also grievances. What grievances? That my clock has stopped working, my table, there is a problem. These were the complaints. Even people complained to that extent, we are working for 6 hours, but basically even the master, guru is not working. This kind of things people said, yes. And even this, that we are here to work for the divine. Now see, it's other side. So, but we have to work in the dining room for sadhaks. This also people have said. And Sri Aurobindo says, if you go by that criteria, then even I would be working for the sadhaks because I am writing letters. So even this basic understanding of what it means to work for the divine. Work for the divine is not the person towards whom you are, or the kind of work you are doing. It's an inner state, an inner attitude, an inner consecration. So even that degree of laziness. So we can imagine that why the divine doesn't do miracles and why the adverse forces still continue, though with a decreasing intensity. That part is very clear. So why they continue, and do we have a role in it? That is the question we should ask. Or are we able to really see things as they are, or our vision is distorted? All these are the right questions. But we expect that things will just happen and we'll just walk in and enjoy. It's like, you know, people, that Somnatheshwara story where they offer milk and go to heaven, all the asuras. And there they start fighting because you are still full of ambition. Now there is no law which is going to save us from the indispensable minimum effort, let me put it. needed for this evolution. And mother said it so beautifully. She said, everywhere there is anguish. What is going to happen? What is going to happen? When will it happen? And she says, all that I can say is what Sri Aurobindo said, if only man consents to be spiritualized. So people ask this question, for example, that other day someone was asking about Bangladesh. What is happening in Bangladesh? Are it's happening because we are asleep. The divine gives us a wake-up call. When we don't heed, he gives a shake-up call. Wake up. Gather strength. Be united. Look at, I mean, for instance, just taking it a little aside, whether it's the ashram life or a will, India at large, or the people who claim to be under Sanatana Dharma, people are so disunited. Generally, mankind in anywhere still lives by selfish and we still can't see the reason why these two ideological groupings have succeeded. One is Islam, the second is communism. It's because they are united. They may fight within themselves, but when it comes to ideology, they are united. Now, that's not the unity we want. Agreed. Because we don't want unity of uniformity. We want diversity. Definite diversity. And that's not how we should go about. But unity, a fundamental unity, even about the supramental world, Mother has said, but unity is needed. Without unity, you cannot have. Why? Because just as within a man, if there are contrary wills, one part wants the divine, another part plays with the adverse forces, third part says hostile forces come, have nice puri, halwa, I have made for you. Then inner field will be a field of constant tussle, battle. Ultimately, divine will win the victory, there is no doubt about it. But how much loss, how much time? So, if we say that time is taking long, it means basically that we are passing a judgment on ourselves that we are insincere. So we don't. So there is the miracle aspect of life, but there is the effort aspect. That's why Sri Rama takes the monkeys along. He was capable of doing everything. Maybe he could have enrolled Hanumanji and Nalanil and few others. That was enough. Because if you look at it, the war was basically fought by these few heroes. Same with Sri Krishna. But the Gwal Bal have to be prepared. So this preparation for the new creation is indispensable. And till, though in principle the victory has been won, but we have a role to play. So instead of asking this question, when will this happen? We should ask, we trust it will happen, but is there something which we need to do from our side? What is our role, our effort? That would be a valid question. And that's where one of the aphorisms of the mother, where she speaks about these adverse forces and how they will be won, what is our role in their victory, what does it mean, victory over adverse forces means what? What is their origin? What is the purpose for which they have come into creation? So we'll read this. This is a commentary of the mother on one of her aphorisms. And the aphorism is Sri Aurobindo's very scathing aphorism on man's state. Examine thyself without pity. Then thou wilt be more charitable and pitiful to others. So first thing is that if we have to be pitiless in trying to see, so it should be only ourselves rather than the world around. And then she says, this corresponds to something very profound. Mother's commentary. Indeed, men have always considered themselves victims harassed by adverse forces. Those who are courageous fight, the others complain. So this complaining tendency, grumbling tendency, everything somebody else has to do. Suddenly we are waiting. Even when people speak about the second coming, they don't realize that the second coming will happen and will go away. And you will still be waiting. You will not recognize. Recently someone asked me this question. He said that, you know, there is the second coming prophecy in Christianity. I said, yes, second coming has come and gone. But you expect him to be born in Judea and speak Hebrew and Latinized English. Even a person in Italy doesn't speak Latinized English. So imagine if Christ came again, what will he speak? Same with Krishna. Sambhavami yoge yoge. So you expect him to drive a chariot and speak in Sanskrit same way. No, he will not. He will come and go and you won't recognize it. Buddha also speaks about the second coming as, you know, a being of love. So this is because we are wanting not second coming for the, we just want things should be easy. So God should come, make everything easy for us. He has made it so easy so many times if you look at it. But every time mankind collapses. But this time of course something else is happening and that's what Mother will point towards. But first thing is, why there are adverse forces? So those who keep complaining about adverse forces, they need to understand that where is my door which is open? I need to find that door and close it. It's no use complaining about adverse forces. But I have an increasingly concrete vision of the role that the adverse forces play in the creation, of the almost absolute necessity for them so that there can be progress and for the creation to become its origin once again. See, this is what happens. So when you are hit, let us take whether it's Bangladesh or whether it's India. Unfortunately, we wake up only post-catastrophe. We don't learn the lessons of catastrophe. So we wait for one more catastrophe to happen. Then we wake up and we start thinking, what should we do? What should we do? How we should react? How should we act? And time passes. So much destruction takes place. So this is the first thing that we have to remember, that these forces come to incite us to progress. And such a clear vision that instead of asking for the conversion or abolition of the adverse forces, one must realize one's own transformation. Pray for it and carry it out. So if we want the world to be rid of adverse forces, to be rid of Ravana, to be rid of evil, darkness, abolish that little evil, that little wickedness, that little darkness inside us. And actually that's all that is required. Nothing more is required. And we, whatever extent we have. And if we can do it, we have helped the world move one step forward. This is from the terrestrial point of view. I am not taking the individual standpoint. We know the individual standpoint. This is from the terrestrial point of view. It was the sudden vision of all the error, all the misunderstanding, all the ignorance and obscurity, and even worse, all the bad will in the terrestrial consciousness, which felt responsible for the perpetuation of these adverse beings and forces, and which offered them in a great aspiration, more than an aspiration, a kind of holocaust, so that the adverse forces might disappear and have no further reason to exist. So she is describing her own terrestrial experience. And this world is so full of bad will. Actually, if we really look at it, in everyday life, people may live right in an ashram, right next to the samadhi. And yet, that bad will which comes out in so many ways, thoughts, in words. So, as long as it is there, adverse forces will feed upon it. We are feeding them and they are growing fat, fatter and fatter. And then worst is, this is the kind of humanity which complains later on. See what is happening, nothing is happening. You are one of the hubs who is transmitting this virus and then you expect that the virus should cease to be. So she says, their presence was made unavoidable. So Mother says that I was offering all this holocaust, in a great holocaust, means giving herself in that fire, taking it all onto herself and offering it. So Mother says their presence was made unavoidable by all these things that were negations of the divine life. So if you read through Savitri, every doubt that one has in mind, isn't it a negation of the divine? It may be about the divine, it may be about the divine life. Whereas if you look at it logically, if at all there has to be a logical conclusion, if there is a divine, let's start with that. If there is no divine, then everything is meaningless. If there is a divine, it is inevitable that today or tomorrow, creation will become divine. This is basic common sense. We don't have to, you know, try to understand anything more. When it will happen is one part of it. It is inevitable because whatever is at the source, and by definition it is the origin, it is in everything, everywhere. So if there is a divine, creation will become divine. So this is every doubt, every complaining, grumbling. Mother has used this. When people complain or grumble, she says, it inevitably draws the adverse forces near. And even during illness, so Shubhendu would say, stay quiet. Don't start complaining. Don't start grumbling. Because he'll open the door and all kinds of things will come in. And I've seen this. People, they fight, they quarrel, they end up, they're not realizing that they are becoming a feast for these forces. So much so that if you come in the company of such a person, you will get a headache. Because you just can't help it. It's they are full of that swarm of like mosquitoes biting all over. And people somehow, they enjoy. They don't sit quietly and look inside carefully that where am I? All of us have a little door open, a little darkness to be removed, something to be worked upon. So, she says, their presence was absolute, was made unavoidable. And this movement of offering of the earth consciousness to the Supreme in an extraordinary intensity was like a redemption so that the adverse forces might disappear. So we have the individual and the terrestrial standpoint. Mother is speaking of the terrestrial standpoint. She sees the entire swarm, and what does she do? She doesn't talk about escape. She takes it all in and offers it to the Supreme. So same thing individual has to do. When we discover these things within us, or instead of looking outside, look inside, and wherever we discover, that's why it starts with examine thyself without pity and offer it and pray for the redemption, pray for the grace. Someone the other day was speaking of justice. So I was saying, see, if you call, again regarding Bangladesh, all the Hindu and this thing is going on. So he was saying, but I'm calling for Kali and Rudra. I said, you'll break down in 1,000 pieces if that Rudra and Kali come. You take it as a joke that, you know, you are calling something, and if they come, they are not going to spare you either. One Veerbhadra destroyed the entire... Because they are going to see where you are standing. So mother says, don't ask for justice, ask for grace. Grace can resolve everything. And it does it with a finish which is unimaginable. It'll make the weak strong. It'll give strength and courage, fearlessness to those who are weak. At the same time, it will tame those forces which are hostile. It'll do that also. How on China border Mother says that, you know, the Chinese unfortunately were more receptive because she wanted Indian military to fight back. But all that, we'll not, bye-bye, all this was happening. That time, the only thing was that she kept telling Chinese, go back. And they turned and went back. She recounts that they suddenly turned, and it's documented unexpectedly how they went back. So she will do both. The grace will do both. Grace will inspire you with courage, faith, which are necessary. Faith and courage are necessary to face any situation. And the second is with regard to the others, she will tame the wild forces. Just the very presence of the grace. So we should invoke grace, and grace works incalculably. So this is the lesson she is reminding us. And then she gives us a little program. As long as it is possible for a human consciousness to feel, act, think, or be contrary to the great divine becoming, it is impossible to blame anyone else for it. It is impossible to blame the adverse forces which are maintained in creation as the means of making you see and feel all the progress that has yet to be made. And one of the classic examples is in India, what's going on now, you know, that Hindu-Muslim issue which is long. You may blame everybody, but have you been selfless? If you really look at the Hindu community, I'm just talking of that, that you have not been selfless in politics, in business, everywhere. You are just seeking your own advantage and benefit. Leave the Aryan ideal, they will be far, far away. There were always people all around, but look at when that, during the time of Shri Krishna, and why they were not able to come in. Whenever they came, they were repelled back because there was the Aryan ideal. Now we have become paper tigers, you know. There will be good lectures on Vedanta. After that, it will be like Chadava. Chadava is what is going in the hundi. It's so blatant. It's so crude. So we have to learn to be that it's not enough that we are only thinking about these things. We have to live it in everyday life. And it's so, that's why it's so interesting that while we, of course, the Vedas and Upanishads are our background, beautiful backgrounds, and the Gita, of course. But see, what Indian psyche remembers, it's Rama and Krishna, living examples. When you live an ideal, then you are capable of. The rishis during the forest, sages, why they had to depend on Rama to come in? Because Rama is living the ideal. So sometimes I say we should become living scriptures. Each individual should become a living Veda. Not something that he has learned the Vedas and he can recite the Vedas and he can give the meaning. That's okay. But what it means to live the Veda, it means that Agni which you are describing should manifest within each one of us. The Indra, that vast consciousness, should express itself within us. The Maruts, the swift winged thought power, powers of thought, they should express in each individual. And if each one of us, or even a handful of us, Mother says only Shubindu spoke of 100 men, could be that, then who can stand? So instead we get into that wrong groove. When you too much think about the adversary, you begin to behave like that. We talk about having more children, all this. This is not the way to really recreate this ancient mighty civilization. So what's happening in India, same thing in the world. Same about ashram. The mother gave this solution. When ashram was going through the difficulties and it was attacked. So on one side, mother gave very strong message that this ashram has been created by the Supreme Lord and there is no power in this world or any other which can dissolve it unless the Supreme himself decides. At the same time, during the Second World War, when people were, contrary to Sri Aurobindo and the mother's clear-cut statements, they were very happy about, even Subhash Chandra Bose shaking hands with Hitler. Sri Aurobindo said, if you want me to pack up the ashram, tell me, I'll do it. Because he knew this will open the doors to attack. So she does not blame anybody. The mother doesn't blame any party, any group. She says that we have to hold the flag so high. And she says, whom are we fighting? She says, we are not fighting a party. We are not fighting a religion. We are not fighting. We are fighting falsehood, obscurity, ignorance. What a beautiful statement, that wherever it is, it may be within us. It is, of course, within the individual, within a community, and wherever it is. That's what we are fighting. And then she said very clearly that it is the ashram has to, the difficulties ashram is facing is because of the members not yet converting themselves, something to that effect. That we have to change within. And this is so true. Now people take it very lightly and easily. Oh, if we change within, then by then. No. We can change even in an instance. There are acts of courage, heroism, where people have changed in a moment by that great aspiration. So without this inner change, any group, any national life, humanity, will always be subject and prey to the adverse forces. So of course they will be individuals who will always evolve and come out. That's of course there, who will live in the higher consciousness, who will be a help to the earth. But she's speaking of the general terrestrial state. And then she says that how this experience of adverse forces came. This experience came after the vision of the great divine becoming. And I asked myself, Since this world is progressive, since it is becoming more and more the divine, will there not always be this intensely painful feeling of the thing which is undivine? So this is another aspect. What is adverse forces? Things which had a place at one point of time, which includes brutality. There were times of empire when people went, conquered. That was necessary at that. If you see the heroic age, that's how it is. That time nobody called it bad or evil. It was like, okay, you're attacking, we will resist and let's fight it out. That's how it was. So she feels that will not they be always present? But then she gets a very interesting answer. Will there not always be what we call adverse forces? That is something which is not following the movement harmoniously. Then the answer came, the vision came, no. Indeed, the time for this possibility is near. The time for the manifestation of that essence of perfect love which can transform this unconsciousness, this ignorance and the bad will which results from it into a progression that is luminous, joyful, eager for perfection and all inclusive. So here she gives one of the first sutras. One, the time has come for them to go. Because otherwise we can see, for instance, reason was so necessary some time back. People have to be reasonable actors. Now, reason has become a tool in the hands of the adverse forces. So when we go into intuition, won't reason remain the adverse? He says, no. There is a supreme love. Now, this is something which the problem is when we look at it from the point of view of what we mean by love. So we think, oh, love can really heal. We have heard this like a cliche. But the fact is, as an individual, one can experience, I'm sure many people experience it. I can speak about myself that if you keep referring your difficulties, even the seeming impossible things, to the mother for a love to act upon it, slowly or swiftly they vanish. And even the apparently most impossible things, the hardcore resistances, so much so that 10 years back when you look back, you say, I was really such a joker. Not that, you know, you become less of a joker. I mean, you are not that kind of a joker at least. And then you see that how things which appeared as really impossible to cure within, she cures. So she is pointing toward that love, that basically humanity should turn toward the divine. But not the divine of religions, a god who is seated, not the divine of a cult or this thing. This feeling that there is something much mightier, much greater. There is a love at the origin of things which can heal us. How that will happen? Now she will give the next sutra. Individually, yes, we all can turn and we can heal within ourselves, cure within ourselves, all that contradicts the divine. And as this happens within us, it helps the world. Each little victory, one upon oneself, is a victory that gets replicated in the world, makes it easier in the world. So this part is clear. But what about the world itself? So here she says, what is the role we have to play additionally? It was very concrete. And this corresponds to a state in which one is so perfectly identified with all that is, that one becomes, one has to hold the breath and read it very carefully. One becomes all that is anti-divine in a concrete way. And that one can offer it, one can offer it and truly transform it by offering it. What is she meaning? She's not saying go to a den of terrorists and say I want to join you because I have to become undivine. She's not saying that. First thing clear. That I should join a gang of hoodlums. And no. By becoming, she is saying, all of us carry within ourselves certain parts which are anti-divine. We don't want to see it. We see it in others. A little thought crossing which has doubt. A passing moment of, oh, why? Complaining. It may be a passing moment. Oh, why is the world so difficult? Lack of faith. Dipping of faith. I'm not talking of big things which are very obvious. A movement of lust, of anger. And what we want is, oh, this should be away. Away. So what we do is, we take the path of escape. We'll not meet, we'll not speak. Because if we meet people, interact with people, I am likely to get sullied, so I'll become a Sadhu Baba. This is where she is speaking of becoming. Becoming means that in us there is this anti-divine, undivine. And in trying to be holy, we shut our eyes to it. Rather, we should accept that burden. Yes, there is also in me something. This is my package, not somebody else's package. And this I have to offer. So that's why I said we have to hold our breath and read it, because many people would draw this idea, oh, I have to become anti-divine. All right, I must first become a gangster. Then we have a miraculous turning of a gangster. But if we look inside, there is a little gangster inside us. And you know, it comes out most unsuspectingly. I have seen this, I can give one example, how it comes out. Not the gangster part, but that ego, how it comes out. So during the time of Corona, I am on phone talking to someone and suddenly the police stops. So I could have handled it several ways. Suddenly I ended up saying, I am a doctor from the Indian Air Force, and he is suddenly backing off. They realize, what am I doing? See how the ego comes. It was not needed. Nothing is needed. But I know that you can say it. There is nothing wrong with it because it was a factual truth. But the state of consciousness was suddenly that, how dare you stop me? Don't you know who I am? Now this is ego. I can't say. I am speaking truth, but this truth is laced with ego. So it was the spear of the ego. And naturally he was pretty confused and okay sir, go. So your ego gets a little kick about it, that it works. But that's not how it should be. So that's where, and so many, they unsuspectingly they will come up. Suddenly somebody, and you feel that other part which is there inside us. So we have to see these things and not close our eyes. So they are there. So then she gives. And one can offer it and truly transform it. So one has to become conscious and then offer it. Mother, that old fellow is still there inside. Otherwise, I can walk away saying, yes, see, look at these fellows. What are they doing? Okay, it's Corona, but they can't stop everybody. Now, that's another route, which many people take that route. That look at these fellows. Poor fellow, if you look at it from the point of view of compassion, these police people, I'm giving an example, traffic fellow, police fellow, they were so harassed because they were on a duty. They are missing out on their festival. They are missing because they are on duty. I understand this. What happens when you are in uniform? You can't say, you go on duty there. And he is standing there. And now he is basically, in a way, it's very difficult for a man to just stand there, do nothing. So he gets an opportunity to do something. So he just stops everybody. Now people get angry. But if you look at it that way, whole day and wearing those boots and uniform, I tell you, it's a torture. It's not easy. I remember the only problem that I had was wearing the uniform and boots in summer in Jorhat is like, why do we have to do it? But you have to do it. You get used to it, but that's how it is. And when you have to wear ceremonial, so you can look at it like that. And if you tell them that, I understand that you are doing your duty, but on something else. But so you have to offer it. But very often we end up, this example, so that very often we just end up blaming the other person. It's convenient and easy. I am a good guy. He is the person to be blamed. So she tells us very interestingly. Basically, this kind of will for purity, for good in men, which expresses itself in the ordinary mentality as the need to be virtuous, is the great obstacle to true self-giving. Now you see, I'm a pure person. Other day somebody was asking, just yesterday, that if someone has earned money through wrong means and gives to the divine, will he accept it? I said, why not? Money has no color. Why not? I said, this is good, instead of giving it to the, you know, what is it called? The alcohol mafia, he's giving it something good. It will be good for the divine manifestation as well as for the divine. So then what about, you know, the divine punishing? Are, this is a chance. The fellow may actually undergo a change through this process. Why do you want to divine to always sit like a whip and keep punishing people? See, we have created a divine who is no worse than the adverse forces, who is constantly eyeing on people's mistakes and picking them up. So when we look at it like that, that, you know, there are people who want to be very virtuous and they want to be holy. And it's very nice in this ashram, we don't have things like Swamiji and a dress code, otherwise people get puffed up just by this. Imagine, you know, any of us, okay, it's funny, but walking through the ashram and while everybody, now here everybody is doing sadhana. Somebody may be very far but doing sadhana, maybe more yoginist, but coming here and seeing some of us in white or gerwa or blue or whatever, and suddenly, you know, oh Swamiji, Swami, Avilashanand. I actually had this funny incident in the train. Unfortunately, odd day when I was wearing white kurta pajama. And casually somebody, that's why I don't much wear it. So casually somebody started asking question, train, huh? So, my nature and with Madan Shirvindos, I was replying. And I went to the washroom in between. So, the person asked, who is he? So, one of my accompaniment who wanted to cut a joke said, Hari, you don't know, he is Swami Alokanand. So, by the time I came, their attitude was very different. Swamiji. So, they started saying, Swamiji. I said, Swamiji, what Swamiji? So then I knew that something, and this fellow, Divakar, he was smiling. That, no, no, Swamiji, see, and he pointed to my suitcase on which it was written AA. It was for Alok. You should stick those stickers. Say, see, Aloka Nand. So then I knew that what is the solution. So Kavita was sitting there, quietly amused at the whole incident. So I say, Acha Kavita, how are, you know, then, oh, Swamiji is married. Now see, the idea, problem of virtuous people. If he is married, then he cannot be Swami. And if twice married, impossible. So people find very difficult to understand stories like Yajnavalk. People have asked me these questions. They can't understand that, you know, how can, are you don't look at the beauty of that love which expresses, now that they cannot see. They asked Yajnavalk also. They asked Mother. There was a person who used to get doubts in his head about Mother's divinity. Why? Only for this reason, that she was married twice. So one day the mother got into that, you know, divine wrath. She said, I know he is having this question. He is not asking me. She said, I felt like telling him not twice but thrice. I am eternally married to the Lord. Now, you know, but she didn't say, because it would have been devastating for the person. So this will to be virtuous, to be holy, to be regarded by others as a saint. What happens? You hold these things inside. Then you don't explain. This can go to what extent? I have seen people today also, I was sharing this, I think yesterday, about Sri Aurobindo Dham story. I knew a person who had turned to Sri Aurobindo and the mother, but he was a kind of guru with his own disciples. But he turned, genuinely he turned, and he used to come with a usual sannyasi's robe, and you know, he used to attend Savitri classes, even he would come to Savitri Bhavan. So we became friendly. So I told him one day casually, why are you wearing all this still? Laughed. He said, I know all this is not right, not in Sri Aurobindo's light. Now he is 70 year old that time, 70 plus. So I said, then? He said, you know what to do? I am caught. Because my disciples, the day I choose to wear something normal, they will be shocked. That whole thing will collapse. So at one level I could understand his compassion is, you know, he's feeling that why disturb their mind. But it goes to this extent that we want to put on a show of holiness. So that's where Mother is reminding us that don't try to do that. This is a yoga of transformation, not a yoga of saintliness. So she says, why it comes in the way? Because you don't recognize. A virtuous man sees vice in others, but his own vice. Yobinda says, who is a saint who cherishes his sins in secret? He could see through everybody. So he says that, you know, these what we call as vices, even what we call as virtues, they are all very crude or faint reflections, but distortions of that original light. Even today, people cannot understand Shri Krishna in this land of Krishna. They understand Rama, but they don't understand Rama. They just paint Rama in a ideal sun, ideal, all that is fine. But when Sita Mata comes with him, Ram accepts it. When Vibhishan ditches his brother, Ram accepts him. Rama is dharmanist. So people don't, they just pick up portion because they want that framework. Rama himself went beyond the frame several times. And Shri Krishna completely went beyond the frame of virtue and vice. Because dharma is central, dharma sarvopri. And this is what is so difficult for human consciousness to understand. So, or else we'll reduce Krishna to a flirtatious boy. This is how our human mind plays. So she says, basically this kind of will for purity, for good in men, which expresses itself in the ordinary mentality as the need to be virtuous, is the great obstacle to true self-giving. Because we can give only that which we have discovered and identified. This is the origin of falsehood. And even more, the very source of hypocrisy. The refusal to accept, to take upon oneself, one's own share of the burden of difficulties. And in this aphorism, Sri Aurobindo has gone straight to this point in a very simple way. So, we take again this Sanatana Dharma and the challenges it went through. Why it could not be destroyed and why it can never be destroyed? For a very simple reason. We install gods in the temple, but we carry God in our hearts. This much we all understand. There is no way anybody can reach there unless we allow. Not that temple and all these places are not important. We can make our house a temple. So this is the whole logic that, you know, when things are attacked, this is the time to awaken within us the Vasudev, the Jagannath, and then face it. So that's what she is saying, that we should be ready to. Do not try to appear virtuous. See how much you are united, one with everything that is anti-divine. Every tendency, at one place Shubhinda says, there is not a fault in the world which is not mine. And all mystics have said this, true mystics have, that to discover that in oneself, to offer it, to change it, and to really ask for the light, the love, to transform it, it takes much more effort than to appear holy, virtuous and saintly. Take your share of the burden. Accept yourselves to be impure and false, and in that way you will be able to take up the shadow and offer it. And in so far as you are capable of taking it and offering it, then things will change. Where is my weakness? Where is my shadow? And I give this as an example that, you know, Bangladesh issue. Supposing I was there, how would I respond to it? There we'll find the answer. And in me, remove everything that contradicts the true movement. Will I be ready to give my life for the sake of what I hold true and beautiful and sacred. It doesn't matter. It's not just about religion. And if I am ready to do it honestly, then that is the movement which will have repercussions all over the world. So, do not try to be among the pure, except to be with those who are in darkness, and give it all with total love. So that's the ultimate secret. Mother has shown it with her own living example. I think today we were put in on group also, when suddenly Sudhir Kumar Sarkar, Sri Aurobindo, called him his friend. Friend means my friend is coming, so please. So suddenly he said, you calling me a friend? You are far greater than me. I should be humble, respectful. How are you calling me a friend? And then Sri Aurobindo's answer is very revealing. Maybe we can just close with that. That what really true humility is. Yes. So when Sudhir Kumar Sarkar says, how do I become your friend? You who are so much above me in learning, age, accomplishment and fame, in fact in every respect, rather it is proper that I should venerate you, seek advice from you, be humble to you. Instead I am described as your friend and equal, and that too while writing to someone who is much older than me and higher in status. But Sri Aurobindo brushed all this aside and would not let me go before convincing me thoroughly of my misconception. In his faltering Bengali, which sounded so sweet in his English accented tongue, he said, because our aims, our hopes and our aspirations are so much the same, how can we be any other than friends? The difference you feel is due to the tradition of this country. At present it has gone beyond limit and taken an exaggerated form which seems so unnatural. Everybody who is elder you have to respect. Whether he is true, right, wrong, but it doesn't matter. So this is the example they have shown before us. We should follow that way. So basically adverse forces, when will they cease to be, is the same thing. When will the Bangladesh problem, all this problem come to an end? When we will wake up to our own inmost truth. What is that inmost truth is not a scripture. Scripture is okay. We can read in the scripture, Aham Brahmasmi. But the day we realize that indeed I am Brahman, nothing can touch, nothing can scare us. Because one of the qualities of Brahman is Nirbhaya. It frees you from all fear, including fear of death. And if one man living that truth can have a cascading effect, radiating effect on all others. So this is what she is revealing to us, and to within ourselves to recognize all that is we condemn in the world, criticize in others, all that fear, that doubts, that skepticism. We have to discover it and offer it to her for change. The extent to which we change, to that extent we'll change the world, help in changing the world, and to that extent this world will become clearer of the adverse forces. Chema.